Morning, today's daf is Kuf Yud Zayin in Chulin. We are starting on Kuf Tet Zayin Amud Aleph at the very bottom. We're starting with the Mishnah, and we're discussing today the Keva. We use the word Keva. The word literally is referencing the stomach of the animal, literally, specifically the fourth stomach of the animal. Ruminating animals have four stomachs. We've discussed it extensively back in the third paragraph of the Masechta. But today's discussion is going to be focused around the fourth stomach of the animal. Now remember, we're in the eighth parak of Chulim. We're learning Basa B'Chalav. Why are we interested in the fourth stomach of the animal? So our interest in the fourth stomach of the animal is because, generally speaking, there is some of the insides of that stomach. Not talking about the actual lining itself, although we will talk a little bit about that today. But the inside of that stomach that has what we refer to as rennet. It's basically coagulated milk that's been sitting there for some time. And it's wonderful. What they discovered a long time ago is that if you take that and you put it into milk, so what it's going to do is that it's going to catalyze. It's going to have the right number of enzymes that's going to basically turn that milk into cheese. And so, using the rennet of an animal in order to make cheese. So our Mishnah is going to be discussing that issue. Now, what is the issue? The issue becomes that rennet has been sitting in the stomach. And that rennet is what? It's milchik, it's fleishik, maybe it's both, it's basa b'chalav. So there are things to take into consideration. What if the rennet comes from a non-kosher animal? Is that going to make that rennet now problematic? So there are a number of things to take into consideration in terms of the rennet. And oh, by the way, we also will be discussing using the actual lining of the stomach as well, meaning those enzymes are not only contained in the rennet of the stomach, but those enzymes are also contained in the stomach lining itself. Now, the stomach lining for sure is meat, meaning the stomach lining is part of the stomach of the animal, which is part and parcel of the basar. And so that for sure is considered meat. So what if I use that in order to make cheese? That lechor would, of course, be basar b'chalav. So stay tuned as we're going to be discussing that as well. All that coming up in the Mishnah and in the first sugya that we're going to be tackling today. Kevas avikah chamishol nevela hareze asura. Using the rennet, now we use the word keva over here, but when we say keva, we mean the chalav karush shebesoch akeva. We're talking about the milk that is congealed inside of the stomach. So the word keva over here is referring specifically to the milk. Now it says ove kochavim v'shal nevela. Now that language of the Mishnah is a little bit challenging in terms of how to make heads and tails of it. So let's wait a little bit until we get to the Gemara. The Gemara is going to make better sense of it. Right now, let's just simply say shal nevela, meaning the easiest way to say it is it's not kosher. It's coming from a non-kosher animal. So how is the asur? So the Mishnah says that you're not allowed to use it. Now, ostensibly, the reason why is because since it derives from a non-kosher animal, so it has the status of non-kosher. And the simplest way to now say over the Mishnah is that basically the rennet now takes on the status of what it comes from. If it comes from non-kosher, it's not kosher. If it comes from kosher, it therefore is kosher. That's the easiest way to say it right now, but that's a simplistic way to look at it. And in just a little bit, we're going to be a little bit more nuanced in terms of how we look at the rennet. The Mishnah continues, Amamid ba'or shel keva k'sheira. Let's say I use the or shel keva. So here you see the expression very clearly. We're now talking about the actual lining of the keva itself. So if I make cheese with the or ha-keva, which is basar, so interestingly enough, the Mishnah writes, it's kosher. It's fine. Now, you wonder right away, well, how could that be? I'm taking a piece of meat, I'm putting it into milk, am I not now creating basa b'chalav? So right away you already know, well, it's not exactly basa b'chalav, because in order for it to be basa b'chalav, there has to be bishul. And over here there's no bishul. Okay, that's obviously important to remember. The Mishnah itself goes on to write, as we turn out to the top of the next summit, Miesh benosim tamar is asura. Now, if there's a transfer of taste between the meat and the milk, so therefore it's going to be asur. However, im yesh benosin tamar is asura, period. Meaning that if there is no transfer of taste, so then ostensibly would be fine. If there is going to be transfer of taste, so then it's going to be asur. Okay. Even if there is no transfer of taste, I'll give you something wonderful to think about. Even if there is no transfer of taste, essentially what's happening is that I'm taking meat, I'm taking milk, I'm mixing the two together, and again, I know I'm not mixing them together, but I'm using the lining of the stomach in order to serve as the catalyst for the milk to convert it to cheese. And the Mishnah is telling us, well, as long as there's no transfer of taste, it's fine. Well, if there's no transfer of taste, isn't that effectively bittul? And if that's right, meaning if it's effectively bittul, so aren't we being mevatol iser lechatchila? Okay. Now, it's a big question to think about, and there are a number of suggestions to address this issue. Maybe, although the Mishnah doesn't seem to be reading this way, maybe the Mishnah is only talking about after the fact. Maybe the Mishnah is not telling us that it would be lechatchila okay to do so. The Mishnah is telling us that only if you did so after the fact would it be okay. It's a possible way to read the Mishnah, but it's certainly something to think about. Now, the Mishnah here is going to get a little bit confusing. The Mishnah says, Sherish yankam in a treifa kevasa asura, sherefish yankam in a ksheira kevasa muteris. This calf now, where we're taking the renter from, where did it nurse from? Who was its mother and what was the source of its milk that's inside of its stomach? So the Mishnah goes on to say that if I have a kosher calf that nursed from a treifa mother, its keva is going to be asur. Now it makes sense. Meaning because the milk now in its stomach is not its own self-generated milk. It is rather but the milk that's coming from its mother. And so as a result of that, that milk is going to be asur because the mother was a treifa. And so the milk of a treifa is asur. The milk, just because now it went into the keva of this calf, seemingly is going to be, not seemingly, the Mishnah says it's going to be asur. Conversely, if the calf itself was a treifa, but it nursed from a kosher mother, mother was totally fine, so that milk now is going to be totally kosher, and the Mishnah goes on to describe that the rennet inside of it is now going to be kosher. Okay.
So it contradicts the first part, no?
Yeah, okay, good. All right, a lot to unravel in the Mishnah. So, trefesh yankam and trefesh kivas moteris, mibnei sheknos b'me'eha. And the Mishnah gives a very simple explanation, because really now the way to look at the calf vis-a-vis the milk is the calf is just basically but a container. In other words, so really the milk is coming from an external source. We know what the external source is. In one case, the external source is a non-kosher source. The mother was a treifa. Therefore, the chalav inside is chalav treifa. And if the mother was a kshera, even though the calf itself was a treifa, but again, vis-a-vis the milk, we're just simply looking at the calf as a container. And so therefore, what it has inside of it is kosher milk. Okay. Adkan divrei HaMishnah, and a lot to unravel over here. The first thing we're going to have to try to do is just get through the first line of that Mishnah. The first line of the Mishnah read, Kevas oviko cham v'shol nevela. The keva of a non-Jew, now obviously when we say non-Jew, what we seemingly mean is an animal that was shechted by a non-Jew, and that of a nevela. That's the same thing. An animal that's shechted by a non-Jew is by definition going to be a nevela. So how do you make heads and tails with that first line of the Mishnah? The Gemara starts off. If I have a non-Jew shechting an animal, by definition, it's a nevela. What did the Mishnah mean? So, Amar Rav Huna, hachab lokeh gedim and ovek kochav maskinan. So the Gemara gives the following suggestion. Well, maybe the first pshat in the Mishnah is going to be where we purchased a kid from a non-Jew. And v'chayshinan shema yanak min atreifa. And maybe we should have a concern that where did it nurse from? Well, they're not too particular. In other words, they don't have a world of kashas to be concerned with. And so maybe what this calf did is the calf nursed from a non-kosher animal. And so therefore the milk inside is going to be not kosher. Umi chashina shema yanak min atreifa. And the Gemara says, now that's a serious kashash. When I say serious, I mean seriously improbable. I mean, we're going to now take into consideration that this calf that I purchased from a non-Jew, well, the non-Jew wasn't that particular about who was going to nurse it, who was going to provide the milk for it, and so maybe its mother was a treifa. That's really the number of animals that are actually treifas, and the idea that this is something that we have to be concerned about. V'atzanan, and in fact, we have a Mishnah. We learned this Mishnah earlier in the Masechta. You can buy eggs from whomever. You can buy eggs from a non-Jew. In other words, remember we spent some time identifying what is a kosher egg, what's a non-kosher egg. So there are ways of marking it. Even if it's a kosher egg, could it not be that its mother was a treifa? And the Mishnah told us it's not something you need to worry about. Meaning it's such an improbable chance that the mother was a treifa, we don't simply have to entertain this concern. And so, we said that regarding eggs, we should say the same thing regarding milk. The milk found inside of a calf that I purchased from a non-Jew, and now I'm going to be concerned that maybe this calf was being nursed by a treifa mother? Unlikely. So, Ela im choshen shema yanak min hatemeya. So the Gemara says, so how about this concern? Maybe the concern is that this calf that I purchased from a non-Jew nursed from a non-kosher animal, meaning the farmer, the non-Jewish farmer, indiscriminately allowed whichever animal to be supplying the milk for this calf, and even if it was a non-kosher animal. Now, umayshna treifet lo chayshinan, umayshna tameh dechayshinan. So the Gemara says, and why in one case are we concerned, when in the other case we're not concerned? Treifa lo shchicha, because again, the chance of a nursing mother being a treifa, it's unlikely. Tameh shchicha. So the Gemara says, but the idea that the farmer is going to be indiscriminate about who is going to be the nursing mother, and the nursing mother is going to be a non-kosher animal, not so unlikely. So the Gemara says, yishchicha afilu gabi didan nechush. So the Gemara says, okay, so then if that's true, what's the difference between buying the calf from a non-Jewish farmer or buying it from a Jewish farmer? So the Gemara says, anu debadlina minayhu v'chichazin lohu mefarshin lohu lo gazer bu rabbanan. Inu delobili bedili minayhu v'chichazin lohu lo mefarshin lohu gazer bu rabbanan. So the Gemara gives a very simple svara. Look, as far as we're concerned, in other words, when buying from a Jewish farmer, we know kosher versus not kosher. We are going to see a calf nursing from a non-kosher animal, so it's going to bother us. Immediately, we're going to step in, and we're going to basically reassign who it's going to be, who the nursing mother is going to be. Masha Ein Kain, if a non-Jew sees a non-kosher animal providing the milk for its calf, so who cares? Okay, in other words, the calf is happy. Right, the mother that's nursing it is non-kosher. He doesn't know about kosher and non-kosher. He may know about it, but it's just not, it's not something that that concerns him. Nor should it.
Different species animal doesn't allow someone else to be
right. That's right. From the Gemara's discussion, it sounds like at least back then, this was acceptable behavior and it was done. But okay, Ushmul Amar Chada Ketani. Okay, so far what we've gone over now is one possible way to understand the Mishnah. When the Mishnah talks about an animal of a non-Jew, it doesn't mean an animal that was shechted by a non-Jew, but rather it's talking about a calf that was purchased from a non-Jew with a suggested cheshash that maybe we should be concerned that its nursing mother is going to be a non-kosher animal. And therefore the rennet inside is going to be rennet coming from a non-kosher animal. That's one possibility. Shmuel Amar Chada Ketani. And Shmuel says, no, that's not how I read the Mishnah. I read the Mishnah as one point. Kevas, shchitas, oved, kochavim, nevela. Very simple. That if I have the rennet of an animal that was shechted by a guy, it is going to be a nevela. The animal is going to be a nevela, and subsequently, the milk inside is also going to be not kosher as well. Meanwhile, let's take ourselves back to the Gemara Avodah Zarah. The Gemara Avodah Zarah introduced us to a number of gzera de rabbanans, right? Bishal Akum, Sam Yenam. Right, all those zeros discussed in the second parak of the Masechta. And one of them is Gvinas Akum. We're not allowed to buy cheese that's processed by a non-Jew. Now you wonder, why not? Meaning it's a natural product, it's milk, right, curdled. What's the problem? And so one of the answers that were given over there, there are a number of answers that were given over there, but one of the answers given over there, according to Shmuel, is because the cheese of a non-Jew is being produced by or Kevas nevela, the lining of the stomach of a non-kosher animal. Now, hakeva gufa sharya. Now, why do you speak about the lining of the stomach? It must be because the actual rennet itself would be fine, it would be permissible. Now, in order to understand this, so a little bit of Rashi over here, I'll say it outside. But, we this will become evident as we continue in the Gemara as well. What the rennet inside of a stomach of an animal, what is its status? Now, I understand from the Mishnah itself, you got a little bit confused. Understandably, you got a little bit confused. Because the Mishnah talks about, well, it depends where it comes from, and it depends whether the calf drank from a kosher animal or from a non-kosher animal. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah ends up on the point that what is the status of the rennet? Pirsha ba'alma. It's basically a waste product of the animal. It's a byproduct of the animal. It's a waste product of the animal. The rennet is not milchik. It's not fleshik. It's just basically, it's perish. It's just some sort of waste product. Just give me a moment. Rashi over here quoting the Gemara. Sha'al Rabbi Yishmael. Rashi dibra amaskel kodim chazara. Kan kodim chazara. Rashi is about, let's say, about 8-9 lines down from when the lines start getting wide. It's the beginning of the line. So a dialogue between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Shimon mebnei ma'asurim gvinas ovdi kochavim. So why is it that the cheese of a non-Jew is aser? Amr lo, mebnei shemin ma'amin aso bekevet nevela. Klamar, b'chalav akar shaba. So the first answer that was given is because of the rennet. Amr lo, balo kevas ha'ola temura, I'm sorry, chamura mekevas nevela v'amr kol kohen. Shedatu yafes sorfer chaya. Really, rennet? Nah, the rennet isn't anything. It's nothing. I'll give you the best proof, and that is the halacha is that if you have a kohen that's working in the Beis Hamikdash, and he discovers in a carbon ola, which of course kulo ola al gabe hamizbeach, the entirety of it goes on to the mizbeach, and if the kohen is interested, if he has the Mishnah over there describes as being a kohen who is dato yafa, which is a euphemism for basically this man is not a squeamish man at all. So he is allowed to ingest the rennet if he'd so like to. Meaning because the rennet is not part of the animal. Now, if it was considered part of the animal, then we're talking about a carbonola. Of course he wouldn't be allowed to eat any of it. But because the status of the rennet is just pure Shaba'alma, so then therefore the Kohen can go ahead and eat it. It does not have the status of the animal at all. So the Gemara then says, okay, so you know what? So the answer is because of the possibility that they use the rennet of an animal assigned for Avodah Zarah. Now, why is that any worse or any better? Well, any worse, let's say it like that. Why is it any worse? So the Gemara there goes on to describe, because when we're talking about an animal assigned for Avodah Zarah, what do you want for your Avodah Zarah animal to be? And the answer is, of course, fatter. You want it to be plump. So there, even the rennet, which as we already established is not part and parcel of the animal, but if it adds to the weight and the volume of the animal, it too will have the status of Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara says, so that's the answer over there. So at one point, there was a consideration that rennet is considered part and parcel of the animal. That's what we'll call, I'll borrow the Gemara's terminology. That's Kodem Chazara. That's before they retracted from their position. But then, after a little bit of dialogue, so then the position is no. Rennet is not considered part and parcel of the animal. It's just pure Shaba'alma. In the case of Avodah Zarah, okay, it has status. But that's simply because it contributes to the volume. But under normal circumstances, it simply doesn't have status. So, let's now try to wrap our head around the Mishnah. So, our Mishnah says, according to Shmuel, that any animal shechted by a non-Jew is by definition going to be a nevela, and therefore you can't use its rennet. Now, when you think about that, and you compare it to the other statement of Shmuel, well, I don't get it. Meaning, even if the animal is a nevela, okay, the animal's a nevela. So we're not allowed to eat the meat of the animal. We're not talking about the meat of the animal. We're talking about the rennet inside of the stomach, which doesn't have status. It should be fine. And the Gemara's answer is very simple. You're right. Lo kasha. Karim kona chazara, kan la'achir chazara. Absolutely correct. Meaning, when the Mishnah over here was presenting its position that a rennet of a nevela is no good, that's based on the original assumption of the Gemara in Avodah Zarah that rennet is considered part and parcel of the animal. And if the animal is a nevela, so is the rennet. But then, as far as what the halacha is concerned, the halacha is that no, that the chalav hakarish besocha is not considered part of the animal. It has no status. Even if the animal is not kosher, even if the animal is a nevela, the rennet inside of it is fine. And that is the conclusion of the, that's la'achar chazara. And even though our Mishnah does not seem to be providing that as a position, right? The Rashi points out, Mishnah lo zaza mimkama. Meaning, okay, our Mishnah is providing what was the original assumption, even though that's not the conclusion. Go ahead, Ben.
When you said that the issue with rennet not giving time in terms of causing problems, right? But if it's this important ingredient that actually makes the whole cheese, then it's not an issue of time. It's a question that it's just an essential ingredient, and it's
being a mamid.
Right.
That's another consideration. I didn't raise it in the Mishnah, but you're right. That's something else to consider. But again, the we just learned together that the truth of the matter is that rennet has no status, meaning it's not kosher. It's just it's considered pure Shaba'alma. But you're right, that within the framework of the Mishnah, that is a wonderful question. Yes.
Isn't the rennet also in contact with the lining of the cable?
So there is what I'm, and I did not, I didn't address it at all. There is a really long Rashi over here in the Mishnah. The really long Rashi in the Mishnah wants to know, is there ever a situation in which the rennet and the stomach are going to be sharing each other's taste one with another? So Rashi says that if the stomach was salted, then it's a no-brainer. Although Rashi admits, I'm giving you the Rashi Prakim, I strongly encourage you to read the Rashi inside. Rashi says it's an absolute no-brainer that once the stomach gets salted, so then there's an exchange between the flavor of the rennet and the flavor of the meat, meaning the stomach lining, and then he says for sure it's going to be usher. Okay, but short of that though, if it wasn't salted together, so then the assumption is that the two tastes remain independent one of another. Okay, continuing in the Gemara, Ksheira Sheyankam and Atreifa VaHaktani Reisha Kevasov VeKocham Mishal Nevela Hareze Asura. The Gemara says, I don't understand. The Mishnah is so confusing because the Mishnah first starts off by saying that the rennet inside of a nevela is the status of a nevela. Then the Mishnah says, nah, you know what the animal is. The calf who nurses is nothing more than a container. And so therefore, what you really have to look at is, who is the calf nursing from? If the calf is nursing from a kosher animal, the milk inside is kosher. If the calf is nursing from a non-kosher animal, the milk inside is not kosher. Okay? And so what just happened over here? Meaning, whose milk is it that is congealed inside of the stomach? Is it its own milk? And first of all, we also, by the way, the other part of this entire discussion, which I know it gets a little bit confusing, is that we just concluded that the rennet inside of the stomach is no status, meaning it's not milk. It's just simply pirsha ba'alma. Okay, so, but let's try to make heads and tails of the Mishnah. V'haktani reisha kevav v'kocham v'shal nevela hareza asura amar chista reisha nirika ochal nevelos hacha ika shchita. So Rav Chista says as follows. Look, the truth of the matter is, of course, there really is no difference between one and the other. But in the Reisha, let's consider the animal's a nevela. And then we go to the fourth stomach and we take out the rennet and we start eating it. From a perception standpoint, what are people going to think? Looks like I'm eating nevela, right? I'm eating the rennet that comes from an animal that wasn't shechted. So there's a perception of it's nirik ochel nevelos. Over here, right, there, I did shechita. So Amalei Rav Avalav Koldekein who Uman Avela Demiisa Di Sharis Le Kavas Alas Alamechel Mina Amart Lo Treifa Shchuta Di Isharis As Alamechel Mina Lo Kol Shekein. Wait, one second. If we're talking about Exera De Rabbanan, let's take the following into consideration. Somebody sees me going into the fourth stomach of an animal that's an Avela and taking out the rennet. So they're going to say, "Well, I know that person doesn't eat an Avela. Okay, so it must be the rennet may or may not be different." Okay, so some will perceive, some will conclude that, oh, I guess he's eating nevela, and some will conclude, oh, must be the rennet's different. But when we're talking about a treifa that was shechted, so here, it's much easier to arrive at an erroneous conclusion, because it's a shechted animal, the animal's a treifa, or I thought it was, but then I see that he's eating the rennet of the stomach. I guess the animal's not a treifa. Meaning, where is it more possible that a person get confused? In the case of the nevela, the case of the treifa. Confusion will certainly surface much easier in the case of treifa, because there we're talking about a shechted animal. Less confusion in the case of nevela, the animal's not a shechted animal. You're telling me there's more concern about marasayan in the case of nevela as opposed to treifa? I could argue just the opposite. El amar rav yisrael amar rav yochanan lo kasha kan kodem chazara, kan la'achar chazara mishlo zazam im koma. So the Gemara goes back to what it said previously. You're right. Meaning that our Mishnah over here is representing a position that was once upon a time held. Or I should say better, the first half of the Mishnah is representing a position that was once upon a time held, which is that the milk inside of the animal is considered part and parcel of the animal. And so therefore the kevas nevela is going to be aser. Once we get to the end of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah talks about, well, the animal is nothing more than just simply a container, so that gives us the indication that the milk is not part and parcel of the animal. And these two points are just simply reflective of, once again, the original thinking as per the Gemara Avodah Zarah versus the concluded thought of the Gemara Avodah Zarah. Am Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, Am Rabbi Yochanan Ma'amina B'Kevas Nevelos Ve'in Ma'amina B'Kevas Shchitas Ove Kochavim. So Rabbi Chiya issues the following ruling in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, which is that I can make cheese with the contents of a nevela. However, it cannot be and make cheese with something that was shechted by a non-Jew. Now, Amar lefan Rabbi Shimon ben Arba, come on, Rabbi Eliezer, damar stamach shavas over kochavim laavos kochavim. Now, why should that be different? Meaning, isn't that the same thing? So basically, he figured it out. Oh, it's not the same thing. Why? Because if it's just stam nevela, and as we have concluded, the rented inside of the nevela does not have the status of nevela. It's a independent entity of that of the animal. So then that's good. An animal shechted by a non-Jew? Oh, I get it. Because you're subscribing to the rule of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says that, generally speaking, Goyim are very religious people. Wrong religion. Bad religion. Avodah Zarah is what we're describing. And it must be that Stam Machshavas Avodah Kochavim Li Avodah Kochavim. Oh, that they must have had Avodah Zarah in mind when they shechted it. And this now is Takrovas Avodah Zarah. If it's Takrovas Avodah Zarah, the entire animal, including its rennet, has the status of Avodah Zarah. Right? Did I figure it out? So Amar Lei Ve'ela Kaman. So in typical Jewish fashion, he says yes, but instead of saying yes, he says, who else do you think it's going like? Okay, good. So the Jewish way of back and forth and give and take is not new. Ki also Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak, Rav Yochanan Amidam, bein bekeves nevela, bein bekeves shechitas ove kochavim, shelo lachush ledivrei Rabbi Eliezer. And Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak says in the name of Rav Yochanan, look, any rennet coming from any animal, whether it's a nevela that was shechted by a non-Jew, an animal that was shechted by a non-Jew, is going to be fine. He does not subscribe to the rule of Rabbi Eliezer that stam avodas kochavim li avodas kochavim. And so therefore it's just basically a nevela, and as we conclude, it's fine. V'hukhisa, ein ma'aminim ba'or kefes nevela, ava ma'aminim ba'kefes nevela, uve'kefes shechitas ove kochavim. And the Gemara says, and so is in fact the halacha. The halacha is that one is allowed to use the Chalav HaKarish Besoch HaKeva, the congealed milk that's inside of the animal. It does not have the status of the animal, even though the animal's a nevela. The milk inside of it is considered a separate entity, its own independent entity, and so therefore would be fine. So whether it's a nevela, or even if it was shechted by a guy, again, we don't subscribe to Rabbi Eliezer. So an animal shechted by a guy is just simply a nevela. In either of those cases, to use the actual stomach lining itself, that's aser. But to use the rennet inside of it, so that would be mutter. Okay, adkan. That takes us through our first sugya today, and we continue. We're on the Mishnah, on the very bottom of Kuf Tet Zayin Amud Beis, as we're about to open up and start our daf today, and we're gonna for the rest of the perek, we're gonna be leaving the world of Basar B'Chalav. Okay, what is this doing over here at the end of the eighth perek? It's a wonderful question. I don't have an answer. Okay, let's go. Chomer b'chelav mi'bedam v'chomer b'dam mi'bechelav. There are stringencies that you have by chelav over dam and vice versa. You have stringencies by blood over that of chelav. As we've discussed already a number of times, if actually you listened carefully to Laning yesterday, Parshat Tzav, so the Torah reintroduces us to the Issur of chelav. We're going to actually quote a pasuk from yesterday's Parsha. So we're going to be quoting a pasuk from this coming week's Parsha. But in any event, so we know that there are two isurim of an animal. You shecht an animal, so you can't eat the chelav, the forbidden fats of the animal. We already described it back in the third parak, and by the way, a little bit in the seventh parak as well, in terms of what exactly are the forbidden chelavs of an animal, and the blood of the animal is also going to be asur. Now there are chumras by chelav that you don't have by blood, and vice versa as well, and the Mishnah goes through them. Chomer b'chelav she'achelav mo'alin bo. Some of the chumras that you have by chelav. Before I even get to the differences in the chumras, so what do they both have in common? They're both isuri achila, and they're both isuri karis. Both of them are going to be subject to the karis penalty if one were to eat both of them, or either one of them, I should say, b'mezid. Okay. However, there still are going to be chumras. By chelav, what are the chumras by chelav? As we turn now to the top of Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, Mo'alim Bo, so is an isur of me'ila, in other words, if this chelav belonged to a carbon, and I were to use it for my own benefit, I'd be subject to the Isra of Me'ila. Now, the Isra of Me'ila has in it three penalties. One, I have to make full restitution. Two, I have to tack on another fifth, which I know mathematically doesn't work, but halachically is 25%. And I also have to bring a carbon an Asher Me'ila. Good. So that is all if I'm Moel, if I misappropriate and make usage of the Chalev of a carbon. As we'll see in just a moment, that's not true by blood. And the major disqualifications that occur to a carbon are going to be effective also to the Chalev as well. The psul of pigol and of noser and of tummy, quickly, pigol, when the Kohen has a machshava of chutzman or chutzim kamo, or the carbon is left beyond its allotted time, that's noser, or the person eating it is tummy, or the carbon itself is tummy, but I describe the person eating it as tummy because that person is subject to the kari's penalty. So all this would be true not only regarding the basar of a carbon, but also the chalev as well. Masha ein kein bedam. None of these apply by the dam. There's no isra of me'ila, nor are the disqualifications pigal, noser, and tame going to apply to dam for reasons that the Gemara is going to explain. V'chomer bedam shehadam noeg bebehema v'chayev aof bein tamein bein ta'orim v'chelev eina noe yel behema torah belvad. And as far as the chomer of blood over that of chelev, well, that's easy to articulate. Because as it relates to blood, the isra of blood is true whether the blood is emanating from a domesticated or wild animal or a bird. Mashenkin, when it comes to the Isser of Chelev, Chelev only applies to kosher, domesticated animals. Menahan immediately, the Gemara starts off with a discussion. Is the Chaya.
Yeah, so you would be Chayav of Dam,
no? Yeah, right, exactly. In other words, by Dam, the Mishnah said that. No, the Mishnah said that. Hadam noeg bebehema v'chayav of. Chelev is only when it's the behema. Right, correct. Okay, Menani Mili, the Gemara starts off with, how do we know this? Amar Rabbianai, the Amar Krakasher Yura, Mishur Zevach Hashlamim. So this is Perek Dalet of Ayikra. This is talking about the Par Kohen Gadol, special Chatas bull that's brought by the Kohen Gadol in the event that he is violating any one of the Isuri Kares. Kasher Yura, Mishur Zevach Hashlamim, Vechim Alamana, Mishur Zevach Hashlamim. Now, the Torah describes how you're going to be taking the imurim of this animal just like the shlamim. Okay, why did the Torah have to spell out just like the shlamim? And so what we're learning is in both directions. Make sure zevach shlamim la parko and Mashiach. Obviously creating a hekesh between the two. Ma parko and Mashiach yesh bo me'ila. Af shur zevach shlamim yesh bo me'ila. So just like there's an isra me'ila by the Chatas of the Kohen, so too is there is also going to be an Isser of Me'ila by the Zevach Hashlamim. And specifically, not just an Isser of Me'ila, but specifically to the parts that are Muram, the parts that are taken off. What are the parts that are taken off? The Chelev. So this teaches us that there's an Isser of Me'ila on the Chelev. So Amalei Rabbi Chanina, Ka'or Zu Shoshana Rabbi. So Rabbi Chanina says, okay, that's a drasha. Rabbi already gave a drasha. You didn't like Rabbi's drasha? Kol Chelev. LaHashem, LaRabasi Muri Kachim Kalim, LaMe'ila. The Pasuk says that all Chelev LaHashem, LaHashem tells us that it's earmarked for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, meaning for us it's off limits. And this is telling us that there's an Isra Me'ila, not only regarding the meat of the animal, but also regarding the Imurim as well. So Amar Abai Itzarech, the Ikas Rechmana, Chelev Hava Amina Chelev in Yoseres Ushtei Klayas Lo. So the Gemara says, okay, look, Perek Gimel got me only so far. It only tells me that there's an Isra Me'ila by the Chalev, specifically the Chalev and only the Chalev. How about the other parts that are going on the Mizbech? Right? The Yoseris, the diaphragm, the Shtei HaKlayos, the kidneys. Those are the parts of every animal that also go on the Mizbech as well. Is there an Isra Me'ila by them? The answer is yes. But if all I had was Perigimol and Kol Chalev, that only is referencing Chalev. So therefore, Kasar Rechman HaKashir Yuram. That's what I gain by Perig Dalet. The Ikas Rechman Akashir Yoram Hava Amina Chelev Alya Delesa Beshur Lo. Now, if all I had was the Pasuk and Perek Dalet, so we're learning it from the Shur, the Par of the Kohen Gadol. Par of the Kohen Gadol. It's a carbon chatas, and it doesn't have the fatty tail. I might have thought that the fatty tail which goes on to the Mizbeach is not subject to Me'ila. So Kasar Rechman Kol Chelev. So that's why the Torah says Kol Chelev. So basically, the two drushas are supplemental one to another, and it teaches us that the Isra of Me'ila applies to not only the Chela, but also all the Imurim of the carbon. Amalei Rav Mari Rav Zvidi, Alya Ikre Chelev, Titzer Ba'achila. So the Gemara says, now, wait one second, the Alya If that is referenced as chalev, so therefore it should be prohibited to eat. Meaning, shouldn't the entire tail have the status of chalev? Amalei alach amakra kol chalev shor v'kesev v'ez. Davar hashava b'shor v'kesev v'ez. The Torah says that no. In order for something to have the quality of chalev, the iser of chalev, it has to be something which is applies to all three types of animals. The shor, the kesev, the ez. The fatty tail is only by the kesev. And so, therefore, it does not have the status of chalev. Enachinami, its imurman has to be put up onto the mizbeach, but it does not have the status of chalev. Revi Ashi Amar Chelbo Haya Ikre Chalev Stamalo Ikre. Chelbo Haya Ikre Chalev Stamalo Ikre. So the Gemara says that if it's Chelbo Ha'alya Enachinami, but chalev by it doesn't have the status of chalev by itself. It's not called chalev by itself. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, if it, mamish does not have any status whatsoever, shouldn't be subject to Mi'ilah. Meanwhile, we just established it is subject to Mi'ilah. So the Gemara says, okay, I prefer the drasha of Rav Zvid. Masha ain came badan. Now, all these things, meaning Mi'ilah, Pigel, Noser, Tamei, or all things that apply to Chalev, and they don't apply to the blood. We're going to have three drushas, and later the Gemara is going to ask the question, why the need for all three? So, drusha number one, the Torah says regarding blood, it's lachem, it's for you, which means shalachem yehei. It's under our ownership. So that means to say, of course, that the blood is not going to be subject to me'ilah, because me'ilah means I'm misappropriating. Misappropriating meaning using something that is not mine. When the Torah says that the blood is lachem, okay, so it's ours. So therefore, there's no me'ilah. Debate Rabbi Shmuel Tana l'chaper l'kapar nasati v'lo l'me'ilah. The second drasha given by Rabbi Shmuel is that the Torah says that blood is earmarked for kapara and not for me'ila, because of its very singular focus of and purpose of being used for kapara. It therefore is just simply unavailable for the iser of me'ila, meaning it's a goal-oriented product and it's not going to be subject to me'ila. Rav Yochanan Amar Amakra, who lifnei kapara kalacha kapara, malacha kapara. Ein b'mi'ila, aflifnei kapara, ein b'mi'ila. And the third drasha tells us that blood is going to be a constant. Just, it will be the same after kapara as it will be before kapara. You know, after kapara, it can't be subject to mi'ila, for reasons which we're going to articulate in just a moment, but I'll say it right now. Once a mitzvah is done with something, once the mitzvah is over, so then there's no way that it could be eligible for mi'ila. So if that's true, la'achar kapara, it's also going to be true before kapara. Why? Because who tells us that blood is always going to be in a constant state? Okay. Ve'ema hu la'achar kapara kelefnei kapara. Ma lefnei kapara yesh bo me'ila, af la'achar kapara yesh bo me'ila. So the Gemara says, why don't I just reverse the rule, and why don't we just go in the other direction? Before the kapara, blood is subject to me'ila. This is a suggestion. So therefore, after kapara, it should also be subject to me'ila. And l'chadav shenasa mitzvah suma alam bo. So the Gemara says, look, that can't be. It's just simply an untenable position because it goes against the principle that once a mitzvah is done with something, it's simply not eligible for the Isra Me'ilah. Below, the Gemara says, is that true? I think I can find exceptions to that. Or what? Meaning I gave away the Gemara's answer. They're going to end up being exceptions. But right now, the Gemara is going to cite other cases where we do say this, where even after the mitzvah is done, it's subject to Me'ilah. By the Trumas Adeshin, the shovel full of ashes that we take off in the morning, the first avodah that's done every morning, we take off the ashes and we deposit them on the east side of the ramp. There, mitzvah's done, and it's still subject to Me'ilah. So the Gemara says, Mishum Davi Trumas Adeshin v'bigdeku v'neshneksu v'mbaim kechad. V'chol shneksu v'mbaim kechad em alamdim. So the Gemara says, okay, but I have another area in halacha where even after usage is done, it's still going to be subject to me'ilah, and that's the big dekuna. So the Gemara says that is an opinion, that the big dekuna, even after they're used and after the mitzvah is done, so they're going to require geniza because they're subject to me'ilah. So elal rabbi dosa damer shalo yishtamish b'hem liyama kippurim acher. My ikala meimar, but according to Rabbi Dosa, the drasha is just there to tell us that I can. It only has one time usage. You can only use it for one Yom Kippur. I cannot use it for another Yom Kippur. But short of that, there's no iser of me'ilah. So elam mishum dehave trumas adeshim ve'egla rufish le'ksuvam b'ayim ke'echad. So the Gemara says, Egla Rufa, even after the calf has been decapitated, so the calf is still going to have the status of the Egla Arufa, and therefore it's going to be Aser, before and after the mitzvah is done. So now that serves as my second example. Now that the Torah gives us two examples, they're no longer the rule, they're the exceptions. The Gemara says, Anich lamandam, emalamdin, lamandam, lamalamdin, maikel, amemar. Gemara always asks this question. There is a Tana who says that two is not exceptions, but two is rather the rule. So miute ksiv hacha ksiv v'samo hasam ksiv ha'arufa. So the Gemara says, well, the truth of the matter is that we have miutim, meaning in Shumas Hadeshin it says v'samo, and I will place it, meaning this is the limited situation in which mi'ila applies even after the mitzvah is done, and egla ha'arufa it says ha'arufa the hay. Is a miyut only here? V'talasakra lama libedam. Okay, wrapping up the sugya. Why is it that we have three drushes that tell us that blood is not subject to a miila? V'talasakra lama libedam. Chalam miyut minosar v'chalam utim miila v'chalam utim mituma. So, because we have three halachas. Now, if you remember the Mishnah, we actually have four halachas. But let's just right now deal with three. One to exclude the blood from the Isser of Nosar, one to exclude it from Me'ila, and a third to exclude it from Tuma. The Gemara says, what about Pigel? In other words, that and blood is excluded from Pigel, but we don't have a Drasha. We don't need a Drasha. Avami Pigel, Latzarech Kara, Ditnan Kol Sheish Lomatirim, Bein La'adam, Bein La'mizbech, Chayav Lom Mishim Pigel, V'dam Gufei Matir Hu. Anything that has a Matir is going to be subject to Pigel. Anything that is a Matir, meaning that is going to permit something else to be used or to be consumed. So it itself, the item that is a matir, is just simply not eligible to become pigel. Hajalach kol habasar, and that is the end of the eighth parak, and we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we pick it up with the beginning of the ninth parak of the Masechta.